Hey guys, my name is John, and you're listening to TCK Tales. Today we have a great story from a fantastic individual. The person who's going to be sharing their story is Tirza Walker. She is a senior Jewish studies major here at Moody. And this episode is coming where it is in this mini identity series because I figured identity is something that all of us struggle with. This series is kind of bookended with stories of people who do not know whether or not they're MKs and struggle with their MK identity. But I want to sneak in some people who we may not consider to be TCKs. Last week we had John C. talking about African-American identity and dealing with that being raised in a white family. And today we're going to talk about Jewish identity. I had this idea when I was getting coffee with Tirza early in the semester, and we were just talking, and she was talking about her experience and sharing a very similar story to the one that you guys are about to hear. And I kept thinking, that sounds like me. There are elements of what you're saying that make sense to me. And so Tirza is going to talk about the Jewish experience and specifically what it's like being Jewish in a primarily Gentile world. So here's Tirza.
Hi, my name is Tirza Walker. I'm a third culture kid being Jewish. Although raised in America and having a lineage of those coming from the Mayflower, we also were among those who escaped the Holocaust, fleeing out of Germany into Canada. My grandmother was born in Canada and then moved to the U.S. to California when her father joined film industry. And my dad's side of the family are also Jewish, so both sides, which never really seemed to be anything out of the ordinary until about the time I came to Moody, when I was pulled out of the family unit and thrust into college to sort of be there to take care of myself, when faith became my own, how much practice I chose to observe, things like that. So some people might ask, wait, how is Jewish any different than like any other sort of American? Or like, what makes you Jewish and how can you be Jewish and a Christian? This is something I like to call the identity crisis of history, because you can't actually racially profile a Jewish person, though people have tried for centuries. You can find Ethiopian Jews, Indian Jews. Any country in the world has its own Jewish pocket that also has come to look like the people that are native to that country. So when you go to Israel and you see a regiment of IDF soldiers, you'll have predominantly more Middle Eastern, but then you'll have all sorts of colors, all sorts of different ethnic diversity within this ethnic group. Religious-wise, there's also like a lot of variation in like how much people observe or how little they observe, whether they keep kosher or don't keep kosher. Jewish people tend to be really drawn to actually eating bacon. So that's a thing. But there is a specific sort of mark that's been left on us. Through events at Moody, I actually got interested in finding out more about this mark, this sort of difference, this sort of experience, that living and being Jewish in a predominantly Gentile context brought out in my freshman year. Things that I thought were normal, things that I thought that everyone did, and it turned out that they were very like specific or very different or and sometimes odd. But that didn't come to light as a major difference or experiential difference until we had our swastikas that were drawn on campus. It's sort of interesting that one symbol can be such a pinnacle or a crux in the sort of Moody's history, or at least Moody's history for me. Just like, you know, one guy sort of messing around, drawing a swastika, whatever he says. But when that was announced, I was experiencing a minor panic attack in chapel because Moody had become such a home to me. The first year had been kind of odd. Hard. It had been with brother floors that were trying to gauge how much they could joke about Jews in front of a Jew. And, you know, one of my first experiences with the brother floor was explaining how I moved to the sister floor after being tripled in one of the Houghton rooms for the first 2 weeks. And he said, "Man, three of you in one of those little Houghton rooms, that must have been like Auschwitz." And I was like, "Well, you should know something. My family actually died in Auschwitz, so it was nothing like that." And so moving on from there, learning, engaging how to interact with the brother floor, how to not take offense, that was freshman year. Sophomore year is when the swastika happened. And I started sort of internally processing and trying to understand, like, okay, like, I'm three or four generations removed from the Holocaust in, like, this direct family line. Like, do I have a right to feel this strongly? Do I have a right to feel this afraid? Like, why am I responding so violently to this? So I wanted to look up to make sure that I wasn't the only Jewish person experiencing this. And I found all sorts of studies on inherited psychological trauma. Now, one of the markers in Jewish history is trauma. We have a saying that we say every Purim. We say, in every generation, they rise up against us. In every generation, there's somebody who tries to obliterate the Jewish people. In every generation, there is someone who tries to eliminate our presence because they believe that if they eliminate our presence, they eliminate God's. Because God has bound his name to our name. This is just like one of the reasons of his covenant and the proofs of his faithfulness is that, as a king once asked a rabbi in the Middle Ages, "Prove to me that God is real." And he said, "The Jewish people." Because if every generation there's been an attempt to wipe us out, and there have been people groups who have been wiped out, yet the Jewish people remain. Like, that's an interesting concept. That's an interesting coincidence. That's really not a coincidence at all. So looking through and finding that we do inherit trauma from the experiences of our forefathers sort of stirred a response in me. If in Deuteronomy, God commands the Jewish people to consider all that I've done for your fathers as if I did it for you. This is one of the reasons why I'll be talking in church and say, "Oh yeah, when he brought us out of the Dead Sea," as if I were there and among them. This is like one of the the markers and traditional cultural statements that Jewish people have. Like, we identify as a whole and as individuals. So we're kind of like an odd sort of mix of that sort of tribal culture and individual culture. We're kind of both. So I wanted to respond in a Christ-like manner. I didn't want to respond out of fear or anger or to be stuck in perpetuating that sort of cynicism of expectation for the future. Like, you know, so what? Like, if in every generation they come against us, in every generation God sustains us. So what if hate still exists? Like, I believe in the Messiah, the Son of God, who will one day remove all hatred and defend us and restore us and bringing us back to life. Like, I believe in the King of the Jews. And so I want to be like my king. I want to be a worthy subject. I want to be someone who's going to respond in love instead of hate. I don't want to perpetuate hate. I don't want to perpetuate fear. I don't want, like, you know, the next generation after me. I don't want my children to be, like, in the state of fear. One of my earliest memories concerning the Holocaust, I was probably about 9 when I learned about it. And, you know, there's that expectation that if the Nazis have been here before, they'll be here again. And I thought to myself, all these stories about Jews hiding and being found out. And so I went up to my room and I laid down on the bed with the sheet over my face and I practiced my breathing so that the sheet wouldn't move. Because if my family had to go into hiding, I didn't want my breathing to give us away.
I know I just kind of interrupted you guys at a cliffhanger, but I did need to give ad break, and so this is where it is. We'll be right back to Tears of Story in just a few minutes. TCK Tales is, as you guys know, brought to you in partnership with the MBI chapter of MUCAPA. MUCAPA's goal is to help and be a guide for missionary kids and TCKs who are coming into college and transitioning into the U.S. for the first time, as well as helping to be a bridge between the non-TCKs on campus and the TCKs on campus. They provide education and various events. For more information, go to the Facebook group, MBI MUCAPA at facebook.com to check out more information. Also, you can support this podcast if you would like to give money. There is a link in the show notes. I do not expect you guys to give money. I do not. But it would be helpful so I'm able to do more with the podcast because money makes the world go round. So I need money to do things. And if I'm not making money off of this podcast, I have to be making it somewhere else. A few of you guys are already giving, and I'm so grateful for that. And back to Tears of Story.
That's the sort of just a typical response. I've read so many different cases of Jewish children when we learn about the Holocaust. I mean, we've got a whole people group, not just in Israel, but like those who have been displaced for 2,000 years up until 1948, and some who have not gone home yet, who have gone through pogroms and expulsions from nearly every civilized country in the world. America and Canada are probably two of the only places that have never expelled the Jews. So you've got a whole people group that are experiencing inherited post-traumatic stress, who are experiencing inherited traumas, who are experiencing inherited fears. If you want to know why a typical Jewish woman is kind of pushy, like, she's got a right and she's got a history that says, like, I've got to be this way if I want to be safe, if I want to establish my existence here, if I want to prove that, like, I can be here, if I want to be able to provide for my family, these are natural responses to these psychological traumas. Now, if I take all of the negative of everything that I've inherited from my Jewish identity and I go out into the world, that's going to be kind of what a lot of Jewish people who are not believers are experiencing. They're experiencing this history without any of the answers. They're experiencing this history without any of the hope. They're experiencing the every generation they rise against us, but they're not identifying with every generation God sustaining and God bringing back and God's faithfulness. One of the curses of Sigmund Freud and different Jewish prominent scientists was the fact of atheism being brought into the Jewish mindset and thinking. Atheism on the Jewish mind with those inherited traumas is something I'm glad I never have to experience, because not only do I get to understand that I belong to these people of God, like ethnically, culturally, and genetically, but I also belong to the body of the Bride of Christ. And I get to understand his promises with the whole Bible and the whole covenant from Genesis to Revelation. I get to see not just in prophecy that like Zechariah and Isaiah, but I get to see prophecy in Revelation and in some of the Gospels of this is what the Messiah has come to do. This is what the saving plan has been. This is the Messiah ben David, Messiah ben Yosef. Like this is the whole story. And when we have the whole story, a people that have a heightened sense and desire to go home can go home or believe that we will be home someday. And not just Jerusalem, as close to home as that feels, but the new Jerusalem and home himself. If we are all created with this desire for God, then like we understand finally through the revelation of the Messiah what that's supposed to look like. We understand we're part of the kingdom. We understand that there's a place for our misplaced feelings. You know, a misplaced people have a heightened sense of what it is to be that alien, not of this world Christian. So one of the traumas of the church has been its history towards the Jews. This is one of the tragedies of the church, that they have neglected or tried to erase that Jewish identity, or tried to erase the Jewish personhood from the church, when it's actually a great strength to theology and it's actually a great strength to Christianity. And this is one of the reasons why God calls us to be unified together, Jew and Gentile, in the church, which is one of my passions, especially after the swastika incident, and working through how to respond biblically to that. It has become my passion to help strengthen that unity of Jew and Gentile in the church through educating, apologetics. That's what I hope to do in the future. But it's been beautiful getting to see just how God has shaped and grown that in my heart, where there's now a peace and not a restlessness in trying to understand what it means to be Jewish. Because what it means to be Jewish is to look at the empty tomb and to know that your king is living and breathing and alive, and that he sees everything, you know, every grief that was born every single day in Auschwitz, he bore on that cross. And so I can look at that cross and see not just the 6 million Jews who died, or all those that, you know, all those who are also involved. I don't just see my great-grandfather, but I can also see myself, and I can see the rest of the world. And it's mind-boggling to, you know, to even consider him bearing the grief of one person in Auschwitz, let alone the grief of them all and of all of us. But that's the power of the gospel. And I think it's too often watered down. Like, we don't consider that. And I think if you go into Jewish ministry or Jewish evangelism, that's one of the biggest stumbling stones, is how can I believe in God after the Holocaust? You know, if you inherit all these griefs and fears and terrors, then of course those are going to be things you're going to want to know. Because, like, if you inherit all that, you're going to want to know why you should trust God if this is also the experience. And we've made a commitment not to forget, because once you forget, that's when it's most likely to happen again. And so it's been a blessing to also see Moody's response to the swastikas. After writing an article for the Standard here, sort of explaining my testimony of learning about the Holocaust, being 9 years old, and with those sheets, and I wrote an article, submitted it, and said, hey, like, you know, hate ends here, like with me, and I'm a Jew, and so is Jesus. Like, let's understand that. There was over 100 people who had come from the Moody community and thanked me for the article, but also apologized that it was something that happened here. And so seeing the response that Moody has had and the change and growth that it has implemented since that in these last three academic years has been beautiful, and a beautiful and hopeful example of the church. It's sort of something that we can't just say, oh, we've grown from that and we can move forward, because like the church, the school is something that switches out every 4 years, and every year you get new students coming in. So it'll be important for us to maintain that, and I don't think we'll maintain it perfectly, but I'm glad to have been here when the swastika happened and seeing the response directly after that, because that gives me hope in anything that God's been calling me to through my time here at Moody in doing Jewish studies and wanting to go and talk and minister to my fellow Gentile believers.
The thing I really want to talk about in Tirza's story is the concept of inherited trauma. And I think that's something that we don't consider as much. It's something I'm just realizing now, is the fact that you can pass down trauma. And trauma that is not fully dealt with can be passed down to generation and generation and generation. I liked it when Tirza said that this inherited trauma would stop with her. She would not continue the hate and the anger and the pain that probably subconsciously has been passed down to her, and the fear that had been passed down to her, but instead she would respond with love and in kindness and in a very Christ-like manner. And I think it's important for us as TCKs who have gone through a lot of these issues, a lot of these things, to deal with our issues, because there's a very real possibility that we could pass them on to our children. I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. It's been a little bit of a different format, just a little bit more educational, but I hope it'll make you think differently about your Jewish friends and neighbors, especially your Messianic Jewish friends and neighbors, and just, yeah, to pray for them and maybe even relate and be like, hey, we're kind of the same. Let's talk about how frustrating our upbringings are. I don't know. You guys do what you want, but it's been a really eye-opening and educational episode for me, and I love it when I can learn alongside you guys, because I'm by no means an expert on anything. In regards to not being an expert on anything, if you guys have ideas, corrections, issues, love, anything, feel free to let me know. You can contact me and the show many ways. One of the easiest would be to check out our Facebook page, tcktales@facebook.com. Check it out. Send me a message. If you guys love the podcast, review it on whatever app you're listening to. That helps boost the ratings and gets it in front of other people's eyes. Also, tell people about it. Tell everybody about this podcast if you love it so much. Grassroots is the best way to go. If you want to talk to me and you don't really want to do Facebook, or it's a bit of a longer conversation, or, you know, just want to say, hey, we also have an email. Email us at tcktales@gmail.com and we will get there. We're going to kind of round out this identity series in the next couple episodes. We're switching back to more classic MKs, but we're going to kind of just play this concept of, are people MKs? What makes you an MK? And the idea of once an MK, always an MK. So that's kind of the direction we're going. Until next time, hope you guys have enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you guys next week for another TCK Tale.